I was thinking of hypertension and diabetes as first world problems. That's completely not true anymore. The highest prevalence diabetes countries are mostly middle and low income countries. In India, about 10% of adults have type 2 diabetes and about a quarter have hypertension.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. In development, most policies are one size fits all, but maybe in some cases we can do better. How, for example, could we design a personalized intervention that would incentivize people to manage their diabetes or their hypertension? And if we did that, would it deliver better results for the patient and better results for the policymaker as well? Ariel Zucker of University of California, Santa Cruz, joins me now to tell us what happened when she and her co-author did exactly this in India. Ariel, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hi, Tim.
What are the reasons why most programs are standardized?
So I could think of a few really good reasons, kind of depending on the perspective of who you're thinking about. From the designer's perspective, it can be challenging to design a flexible enough incentive program that has, you know, different goals for different people, different payments for different people. It's just more infrastructure and machinery, and that can be costly and time consuming to put together. And then from the participant's point of view, it can be challenging to understand and engage with these types of policies or programs that are more complicated. So if you can communicate upfront really super clearly everything about a program, sometimes it's easier to understand, easier to remember how everything works. And so you definitely have some sacrifices whenever you start moving from something that's just super simple and straightforward to something that's more flexible. The costs of making that flexibility have to be smaller than the benefits of personalization. I think that's not always the case. What we focus on in our paper are not the administration and communicative costs. But even if you personalize incentives, you have to figure out who gets what type of incentive program. And that can be pretty tricky. So sometimes it's just really hard to know what program is going to be best for what type of person. So you have to have enough information out there to personalize incentives, and that's not always the case.
And spoiler alert, it's that figuring out that we're really going to be talking about today. In general, Ariel, what types of program, if we could do personalization, what types of programs lend themselves to this approach?
It was a bit of a spoiler. So I think the key main condition is that the program has to have some variations that are differentially effective for different people, right? So I think a really simple example, clarifying example, would be with drug development. Sometimes one drug is just better for everyone. So like Lipitor for cholesterol is a big blockbuster drug. Everyone should just be taking Lipitor, and there's not really that much point in personalization. But other times, different drugs are going to be way better for different people. Cancer would be an obvious contender for this. Most cancers are very, very different in subtle ways, and you're going to have one drug that's better for one person with a particular genetic mutation or a particular type of cancer, and somebody that presents with very similar symptoms might need a completely different drug. So, you know, different things have to be better for different people. And then the second condition is you need enough information to personalize. So even if different cancer drugs are differently effective for different people, you still have to do a ton of testing to figure out who gets what. So if you're in a context where you can't do that testing or we don't know the answer, then personalization is not going to be effective. The third thing is sometimes there's information on what works out there, but it might be resting with the participant or the receiver of the program rather than with the person who's actually assigning the program. So in those cases, you know, that can be a problem or it cannot be a problem, but you have to have some way to get the person who has the information to want the same thing as the person who's offering the program. And so that's kind of the issue and the condition that we focus on. Sometimes there's a lot of natural alignment between the person with the information and the person implementing the program. In drug treatments, everyone wants to be less sick. Everyone wants the patient to be less sick. And so there's not really an issue there. But sometimes there's not so much natural alignment. And that's going to be true in a lot of incentive programs. Why? In incentive programs, people are getting paid to do stuff, usually they want money and they don't want to do stuff. And you want to not give them money and you want them to do stuff. And so it seems like there's maybe less natural alignment there since people want more money for exerting less effort. Mm-hmm. But there are often ways to tweak incentives to restore some of that alignment between the policymaker and the individual.
So let me sum this up. In a situation where people have to be divided into groups to get a different level of treatment, for example, it's not easy to do if you base that just on what you know about them already or what you can easily find out.
Yeah, exactly. So in a lot of contexts, you really don't have the information readily available. You can't just do a bunch of tests and figure out who should get what. This is often true with incentive design. And so you're often relying on the information that people themselves have.
Right. So step two, if you let them sort themselves into these groups, there are still problems with that.
I think that there are a lot of pros and cons to different approaches to personalization. In some contexts, you have all this information on people. So my paper is about assigning step targets mm-hmm. for people. And there are more and more apps out there that try and encourage people to hit step targets. And they might have a whole lot of data and information on your whole walking history and all kinds of personal information that they're picking up through your phone. Mm-hmm. And in those contexts, these are really data-rich environments. You know, maybe you can assign step targets based on the information that you have about people. But in other contexts, you don't have that advantage. And so you might let people select into their own step targets. And there can be advantages and disadvantages to that. Typically, it's going to feel a lot more fair mm-hmm. when you let people choose their own incentive target. And that's one advantage. But one disadvantage is that people don't know what's good for them. So they have to have the information if you don't have it. And then there's this key drawback where people might not want the same thing that you want. They might just want to get more money. You might want them to walk more. And so you have to find some way to get around that issue.
And so that's step three. What we're going to be discussing is how you design something that means that they get what's best for them, the incentive and the health benefit, who the policymaker gets something that's good for them as well, as in the right people generally doing the right things, and you combine the two. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. And so the way that we do that in our context is pretty simple. If we're paying people to hit step targets and we're trying to personalize the step target contract that we're assigning people, we want some people to be walking more steps, but we're concerned that they're not really that excited about hitting really high step targets. Mm. And a simple way to try and make those contracts more exciting for the most suitable people is to just pay them more. So we have some step targets that are higher and they pay more, and then we have some step targets that are lower and they don't pay as much.
So Ariel, your intervention was to help chronically ill patients in India to exercise more. First of all, I want to know why this is important. They suffer from diabetes, hypertension. Is this a big problem in developing countries?
It is a really big problem in developing countries. I was actually surprised by how large of an issue it is in developing countries, because I was thinking of hypertension and diabetes as first world problems.
Yes.
And that's completely not true anymore. Obviously, there's still problems in all places, but the highest prevalence diabetes countries are mostly middle and low income countries. In India, where we do our experiment, it's estimated that about 10% of adults have type 2 diabetes and about a quarter have hypertension. So these are really, really wow. high rates for a population that's younger and more active than the US. It is a bit surprising, but it's not unique in developing countries. We're really seeing quick and large increases in prevalence.
This problem has health consequences, clearly, has economic consequences as well.
It does. I mean, and of course, I think of economics as being one of those all-encompassing fields. So yeah. In a sense, economics is everything. And if we allow for that, still the biggest consequences are health consequences, which I think are economic, right? You know, diabetes and hypertension are really uncomfortable diseases. They cause strokes and heart attacks and blindness and amputations and kidney failure and all kinds of really awful complications. Mm. And especially because of these complications, but also routine care like drugs are very expensive. So an estimate from India, it's quite old at this point, from 2010, was that the just direct cost of diabetes care was 2% of GDP, which is just an astounding number. Mm. I'm sure it's pretty noisy, but even if it's off by like an order of magnitude, it's still pretty
huge,
huge number. Yeah.
And so you are helping the people who suffer from this to exercise more, but you're saying there's a step target. Does walking around help?
Walking around helps both diabetes and hypertension.
Gosh.
My read is it's still a pretty active area of research, exactly what type of exercise is best, how much exercise is best. But for diabetes, basically, whenever you take a walk, there's a medium-term improvement in your blood sugar regulation. And so it can be really helpful to get very regular, moderate level exercise. Walking around is a really good way to do that.
And I see from the paper that you and your co-author, who's Rebecca Dizon-Ross, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, right. We know Rebecca on Vox Dev Talks. The two of you, first of all, did a standardized program. Did that work well?
It actually did work well. So I definitely don't want to undersell the value of a non-targeted step target incentive program. So we, in the past, did a program. We paid people about 20 rupees, or it's about 30 cents, for hitting a 10,000 daily step target. Mm-hmm. And we found pretty big effects of that program and increased walking on average by more than 10 minutes of walking a day, which is actually quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was a slightly different program. It ran for longer, which I think made it work a bit better. But we actually saw that it worked pretty well.
Yes. For anyone who tracks it themselves, 10,000 steps is not nothing.
Right.
But having achieved this, what made you think that you could do better?
So it worked pretty well, but what made us think it could do better, the smoking gun was that even in our control group, we were seeing a lot of people that were hitting 10,000 steps even without getting paid. And so that was just, wow, there are some people in our sample that still have issues with blood sugar control, with blood pressure, that are taking a lot of steps, or at least appear to be taking a lot of steps from the data that we have. Maybe we should be assigning at least these people a higher target. And from there, we took a closer look and realized there were also some people who were walking very, very little, and maybe they would have responded to something a little bit lower.
You design a program that will personalize this treatment. How do you design it?
Okay, we tried a couple of things. The first thing that we tried was allowing people to choose their own step target. Mm-hmm. And in order to make the higher step targets more appealing, we just paid people more if they reached those higher step targets. So you saw a menu of three different incentive programs. Some of them had higher step targets and higher payments, and some of them had lower step targets and lower payments. The idea was, if you think you can hit a higher step target, that higher payment is exciting to you. But if you don't think you can hit that higher step target, that higher payment is pretty much meaningless. So then you get separation in terms of which program is most exciting, according exactly to whether it's going to be effective for you.
And how are you evaluating this as well?
So the basic idea was your simple randomized evaluation. Yeah. We randomized if some people got the personalized incentives versus getting a non-personalized one-size-fits-all program. So we also randomly assigned people to each of the three step targets that we allowed people to choose from, and compared allowing people to choose to assigning it.
So the big question, Ariel, how much better was this? I'm assuming it was better. How much better was this than the standardized program?
It was quite a bit better. So we increased the effect of this step target incentive program by about 75% when we personalized versus when we didn't personalize. Surprisingly, it didn't end up costing a whole lot more. Mm. The cost was the same as the middle cost of the three randomly assigned step targets. So we got people to walk more, but we weren't actually paying them a whole lot more. So it was definitely a win for the policymaker. And I think we have some pretty good evidence that it was better for individuals as well. Of course, they were choosing their step target, so they got what they preferred. And also, most people at the end said that they would re-choose the same program that they had chosen before. So I interpret that as at least suggesting that people are pretty happy with having a choice and with what they chose.
What's making people choose the programs they choose? Is it all about money for them?
I didn't talk about all the details of all of the treatments that we did in our experiment, but we try and look with a few different sub-treatments at what is making people choose the right program. And we do see that money is a factor. So one thing that we did is we tested whether making the three step targets have larger differences in payments or no difference in payments changed how people choose. Yeah. And we find that it does. So if you make them all pay exactly the same, fewer people are choosing the higher step target. And if you make the higher step target pay quite a bit more than the lowest step target, more people choose the highest step target. Mm-hmm. So money is playing a role, but we can tell pretty easily that it's not all about money, since even when all of the step targets pay exactly the same amount, so there's no financial incentive whatsoever for choosing the higher step target, a lot of people still choose the higher step target. So I think in this type of preventive health context, you're in a special and cool situation where people don't just want money. A lot of people know that walking is good for them. Mm-hmm. They would like to do it more than they currently are. And so you're also harnessing people's intrinsic motivation to walk more.
And how should we think about this kind of mechanism design? Is it like a best second best, or are we doing it until the doctor, for example, has enough information that she could then assign step targets to people? Or can we let this sort of policy run forever?
Yeah, I think that's a really good and open question. We try and start to answer it in our context. So you know, we run an RCT, we have this giant baseline survey, we collect a whole bunch of data, people have no incentive to lie about their information. So we really have a rich set of characteristics on individuals. Mm-hmm. And we randomly assign step targets as part of our control group. So ex post, we can machine learn how well does all the information that we collected on thousands and thousands of people, it was a really big experiment, how well does that predict their performance in different step targets. And we find that throwing in the kitchen sink and doing a causal forest algorithm, you know, we can assign people fairly effectively, but it actually is about the same as just letting people choose.
Wow.
We don't see big gains from collecting a whole bunch of data, which is expensive and challenging and time consuming, rather than just letting people choose. At the same time, as you get larger and larger data sets, hundreds of thousands of people, maybe instead of a few thousand, and think better about what is the most important information, certainly I could imagine that moving towards assigning based on pre-existing characteristics is going to be a really promising route. And it does do quite well as well if you assign based on previous walking. And we tested that too. So I think both can work. And it really just depends on how much data you have and how expensive it is to collect more data.
In your particular context, there is huge potential for this. It could help hundreds of millions, billions of people. Are there other applications of this type of mechanism design in healthcare for low-income countries?
I think that in general, for incentives for behavior change, which is a really large field, that there's a lot of potential for personalizing these type of incentive programs. Another context where I'm using incentives for behavior change in other projects is for substance use. This is one of the most effective interventions that we know of for people who are in treatment for substance use disorders is to incentivize people to engage in regular treatment attendance and to abstain from substance use. And I think there's probably a lot of scope for personalizing what is the behavior target in these types of contexts where sometimes different people might be differently able to quit cold turkey or ramp down. So that's just one that is very salient to me because I'm working on it in another context. But I think for medication adherence, for getting sleep, another one that people are working on in developing countries. There's a lot of scope for personalizing incentives.
And of course, this isn't just about healthcare. Is there any potential to choose different types of programs you can use this type of design?
Yeah, I think it's really well suited for incentives because it's easy to tweak either the behavioral target or the amount, but it's fundamentally an application of a screening mechanism, and screening mechanisms are extremely useful for targeting all kinds of programs.
But Ariel, this can't be too easy or else everyone would be doing it. So from your experience of doing this, what type of mistakes is it important to avoid? What sort of advice would you have for people who are trying to design these type of programs?
I think that a key interesting learning from our sub-treatments that we tested was that in our context, people seem to have a lot of private information about what is going to be good for them. Mm. So we tested all kinds of little tweaks, like we had people choose their step target before we'd ever given them a pedometer. And they still were able, even without seeing their own step counts, to choose the best target for them. We allowed them to have the pedometer for longer and it didn't really change anything. There's just a lot of evidence from our sub-treatments that people had a pretty good sense of what was good for them. Mm-hmm. There's some other work on choosing incentives for meditation, and they really didn't work at all among people who had never meditated before. And so I think just comparing our context with the meditation context, you know, everybody's walked before, mm-hmm. not everybody's meditated before. These types of things might work a lot better when people have private information and it's not sort of a new mysterious behavior. And so I think it would be worth trying this a whole lot in these types of contexts where people really know a lot about themselves. I'd be a little worried about trying it in contexts where people are trying a new behavior that they don't know much about.
Well, it's very interesting and very exciting. Huge potential for this. Ariel, thank you very much for talking about it.
Thanks a lot.
The paper is called Mechanism Design for Personalized Policy, a Field Experiment Incentivizing Exercise. And the authors are Rebecca Dizon-Ross and Ariel Zucker. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. And all our past episodes are at voxdev.org, where we also have articles about the papers we feature.